Okay, welcome to the next edition of the Next Wednesday Instead podcast. We're going to do a bit different this week because we've not talked about TV in, I think, 8 podcasts, and it seems like we finally should. So we're going to review the new releases first, and then we're going to go through beginning to end the series Breaking Bad, which everybody else other than me has just recently watched. And, you know, we have differing opinions on it, or at least in places, so that might be quite interesting to discuss.
Ish.
In places, come on, we never disagree about anything. This is the closest we come.
Yeah, although it is going to almost be a unanimous
love session.
It's unanimously great.
But it's going to be a unanimous love session with complexity. It's not just going to be, it's, you know, there'll be people
that's
who love
true.
It
which will
others.
Ultimately be more fulfilling.
It will be, exactly. So, but we'll go through the new releases first. And we've got at least a couple of us have seen this time, which is nice. So we'll do 127 Hours first, which I believe everybody's seen.
Yep.
Correct.
What do we think of it, guys?
It was good. Wasn't amazing, but it was good.
Yeah, Dave.
I felt like his performance, Franco's performance, was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much you can do with a man trapped with his arm.
I mean, I liked the look of it, but I feel like I could feel Danny Boyle straining to be creative all the time.
But at the same time, that was very interesting.
A lot of it worked,
I think it did work. I think he did the right thing with trying to be so bold with it. And I think when you try and be that bold, it's going to hit and miss.
Yeah.
And I think in general, it hit a lot more than it missed.
It did. I mean, I think Danny Boyle is kind of like, he does this in everything. Well, pretty much everything. I can't recall a restrained Danny Boyle film. But it feels like the visual style suits more films than others. And like, I feel this one, it really did fit like a glove. It made sense.
It was necessary.
I think they
had to have that, or otherwise.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly, because really, I mean, I knew this story going in from a while ago, and I just felt in my mind, I was like, "Oh, it has to be minimalist. It has to be so." And I was just like, so wrong.
Yeah.
And it makes so much more sense to do it this way.
Well, I just felt like he was clever because it was so kind of expression of what the guy was going through, and he kind of, I don't know, like obviously there's the literal bits when he's having delusions and stuff, which is what calls for like trippy visuals.
Yeah.
But I just think the way they kind of like really got in close with him and
like inside the piss pot.
Kind of brought out the horrible experience.
I think you feel it. I think that was what I noticed a bit like more than anything else. The closest I recall to anything in some time, I really felt like the pain, the injuries and the cuts and the place of it and the, like that little bit of like ground that you're stuck in. It felt like I knew every corner.
I thought it was amazing. Like even like the sound and stuff was incredible. Like it was like
the
when
sound,
he was breathing.
I think probably. But besides his performance, is probably maybe the best thing.
Yeah,
it was incredible.
Yeah.
Like, it really brought out like just the dread of what it would be like to be there, and like how horrible his conditions were.
Yeah,
like,
it was a pretty good soundtrack as well.
Yeah, sick soundtrack.
I really liked the rain sequence.
Yeah,
that was really cool.
That was really good,
well
wasn't
done,
it?
Like,
because that's that's totally something you don't consider, and actually that would be horrifying. Like, and then it worked really well.
Mm.
I'm not sure how it felt like in the last third, maybe with the flashback started to take over everything.
Oh, I mean,
and the dreams
started
to take over everything.
I kind of feel this, like, for the most part, I think that big, all those visuals kind of work.
Because
but
it kept,
at times,
yeah, I mean,
like in the cave, I think with the sofa, that was a bit too much for me. Like, I totally understand that he's reflecting back on stuff, and obviously he's in a weird place mentally at that time, but I don't know, I didn't really, that didn't work for me.
I think I kind of disagree. I felt like it was necessary to kind of up the delusion. Like, he was obviously going to get more and more crazy.
I do kind of agree with that, but I felt like the delusions worked when we kept coming back to the rock.
Yeah.
And when we stopped coming back
to the
rock.
I think the chat show bit's like the perfect
thing. That was genius.
That was the best
bit.
That was amazing.
I literally was, it's like, I was liking it, and then that scene came on, and I was like, right, this is like.
I think actually, you know, there's sometimes there's a scene in a film which just elevates the entire
film. It did.
Film.
I think that was
like,
an example of this. I think this was a 7 out of 10 film in all seriousness without that scene.
It kind
of
went from, and that moment, it kind of went from, oh, I reckon Colin Firth should get Oscar.
And
actually, I think James Franco should.
Yeah, literally.
It.
I have no problem with that.
He did it so well. It was funny. Yeah. It was kind of moving. It was
It's like, because it was funny. It's like when it ended, that was the most devastating bit. Where it just like he'd have that delusion in the chat show and then just cut off when he realized what he'd like. He was absolutely fucked, and it was just that was horrifying. I love that scene.
Yeah,
great scene.
And it was just really, really funny. It felt like almost Patrick Bateman moment.
Yeah, it was. He got a bit Nick Cage.
Nick Cage. It's like I loved his evil chat show host guy. That was genius. But it's a really good performance by Franco. Like,
and
like,
it's incredibly just the film in general. I think it's a very uplifting story, and it's a very kind of like the end. Is very. I mean, I know it's kind of cheesy, but I think it works.
I think it works because it's real, and you know it's
exactly.
real, so you don't.
And
feel
they make a big point to point out
something.
That it's real.
Yeah.
They cut back to the real.
Exactly. And I think it's it kind of different with these kind of endings when it's based on a true story, then, because you don't. Obviously, it's not trite. It's what actually happened, and you can't, you know, say, oh well, I wanted him to die. It would have been more realistic. So you know, no, it's just a really kind of innovative. It's not perfect, but it's kind of innovative, very well acted piece of.
Did you think? I don't know about you guys, but I don't want to say it dragged, but at one point I did kind of drift out of it just because I kind of got
I was lost in the situation.
Considering the story, the how little it dragged was impressed me. I thought it was going to drag more than it.
But I still feel like they could have shaved 10 minutes off me.
I feel completely the same. Like, I think it was a bit. It was about the sofa bit. I think when we reached that, I can't remember if it was after or before the chat show.
I think it was before for me. I think just before it got really epic.
I mean, I could have maybe done with the stuff without the girlfriend that he kept remembering. I didn't quite see
the
point of that. But like I said, it didn't matter because it felt like it was such a good performance.
And also, you know, it's based on a true story. I'm sure that Aaron Ralston had a
sweetheart back home.
Yeah, well, you know, he probably did say to them, like, this is what I kept thinking about. And that's understandable.
Yeah.
But no, yes, it's a really good film. I think you should see it. I mean, I think, like, for me, it kind of, it worked, like, a bit more, maybe, because it just, I was kind of going in expecting it to be rubbish. And for some reason, I just had it in my mind that Danny Boyle was just going to really, really Tony Scott this bitch and absolutely mess it up by overcompensating. Mm. And I felt like he got that so right, I was kind of willing to cut it a bit more slack in other areas. And like I said, the James Franco performance is...
I think it's
real turning point for him, because I think he had credibility before this, but not like that. And I think
he almost had more like comedic credibility.
He did, yeah. It's like, oh, he's kind of interesting.
I was saying to Louis last night, this is the same guy that played Harry Osborn.
I know, and he is so terrible in Spider-Man. Like, he's the worst thing in all of the Spider-Man films, almost.
Really?
Yeah, even because
Christian. What's her name?
Kirsten Dunst. I disagree. I think she has an awesome scene.
I think Harry's worse.
Really? I think he's just awful.
It's a bad character.
And she's bad.
I don't necessarily think it is. He gets to turn. He gets to all sorts of stuff to be worked with. I just think it's a terrible performance. He's got all that like Macbeth stuff about being jealous. He's getting jipped by his friend. He's got
Maybe you're right.
It's quite a juicy role. Whereas Kirsten Dunst, who's not very good, doesn't have anything anyway.
Yeah, and he just takes a good role and messes it up. But here he's just like, it's like a real... Now James
it
was
like
was
Pineapple Express was the point where it all
I think Pineapple Express, because it's like that was the long way.
It
like,
is actually, though. Like, he was so charismatic and it was impossible not to like him afterwards,
I know, you were cutting more slack.
And it was so important to have a really charismatic guy for this film, wasn't it?
Like, it was. It doesn't work without that performance at all. Yeah. It just doesn't. So that was a very important aspect that worked really well. But we'll bring 127 hours, which we all... What would you rate it, guys, if you were to rate it?
7.5.
I think I'd do the same. I can't really decide between a 7
Well, I'll
and
give
eight.
It 8, because I don't believe... If you've got 10 ratings, you're just being a pussy.
Yeah.
If you go for 20. So I'll go for 8. Because I think... I kind of agree that it probably is 7.5, but I'll round up. So next one we'll move on to is King's Speech, which you have seen, but I don't think Jamie has. So we'll try and keep it vague. But I'm like, I want you to go first, because I'm going to kind of go after this film a little bit.
Alright, well, I really liked it. I thought it was a very well made, crowd pleasing film. Completely intent on just kind of leaving you all warm and fuzzy at the end. And I have no problem with that, you know. It was maybe a little formulaic, but I thought it completely worked. I really enjoyed it.
Well, this is my problem with The King's Speech. I feel like it... Not only is it an immensely unambitious piece of filmmaking, I think it's very, very safe.
Disagree.
And if Oscar bait could be, like, a genre, I feel like it has its boxes, and it really cynically ticks them off to the point where I thought it felt fabricated.
There's nothing cynical about this film,
despite the great... I entirely disagree. There was, like, scenes where they'd, like... The friendship would get really artificially, like, split up just because they needed some drama for that scene, and I just felt that it was really not very well done. And if it wasn't for the amazing, amazing performances, I would think this is very mediocre kind of made-to-TV film. I was very unimpressed with, like, the script and the story. And in spite of the really powerful ending, I just think it was... I don't know. There was a company that kept saying, this is so familiar, and at a certain point, I can't let it off the hook. If this was an action movie and it felt this familiar, I would be ripping it to pieces. And but because it's Oscar bait familiar, where all these notes that have been hit 1,000 times before are hitting with good performances, I'm just going to forget about it.
No, I agree that...
Rinsley.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly harsh. I agree that...
I think it's a 7 out of 10 film, but...
I agree that it hits, like, the familiar beats. It's got that kind of mental thing going on, which is very familiar to Oscar bait. But I think it's done quite a... I thought, A, it was interesting to see the royal family in, like, this kind of different light. I'd never really care about them or like them, but this made me kind of see
it's
that.
It's almost like it was the Queen showing them as more sympathetic human beings, except not as good.
No, but it is... I disagree. I think it kind of... It was showing them as human beings, but it was also showing that they were kind of royal. Like, he was a bit of a dick at times, and he was kind of
I understand that, but it just, again, it felt like a lionization of royal values yet again. I don't think there's any need for that. I think that's useless. I feel like they're showing yet again poor little Guy Pearce as the villain of the movie abandoning the royal throne for love, and I didn't buy that at all. I thought that, I know that was supposed to be the bad guy.
He was an arsehole, though.
He was an unpleasant human being, but I felt like he was made the villain because he didn't put duty above all else, and I'm not sure that's why he should have been the villain.
I felt like he was the villain because it wasn't just that.
And it had that really, really cheap scene where he made fun of his stutter, and I was again, I was
yeah,
like,
that's kind of what my point, like, he was completely selfish, he was just like...
Yeah. But that, again, whatever you think of as selfish, that is an kind of a noble act. And I was like, that was supposed to be like an immense moment of villainy. And it just didn't really fly with me at all. I just, I don't know.
I think I heard that historically his character was like was like a Nazi sympathizer.
Yeah, he was.
I don't realise why they didn't.
Oh,
I don't understand
he's
why
terrible human being, and they didn't bring
no, but
that
I don't
up.
Understand why they didn't bring it up. Yeah,
that would have been fine. If you mentioned somebody's a Nazi sympathizer, they're a bit more villainous, then they give up their power for true love. Because that's kind of a romantic ideal, almost.
Yeah. But I kind of feel like you're too cynical. The film's not too cynical, you're too cynical.
You think so?
You just don't
I think it's
get
a fair
that.
Point. I would like to make clear that I think this is actually quite a good film. I think it's a 7 out of 10 film with some excellent performances. Geoffrey Rush is amazing, and Colin Firth, a little bit better than The Single Man last year, but I'd be fine for him to win for this. And also, I thought Helena Bonham Carter was really, really funny. And really,
yeah, she
really
was great,
role.
Wasn't she? Yeah.
And like, she managed to be like kind of almost like the best part of it in a way. She'd just come in, be hilarious, and then leave. And he was kind of like the MVP of the film. But I just don't know. I just felt, apart from that, that literally nothing new is in this film. I don't think there's any long-lasting value to it. I don't think there's any real ambition shown in it. And I don't think it necessarily has
I don't know. I thought
point.
It kind of like... I kind of liked it because it was a British film. I thought it was quite bold in that. No, maybe not in familiar beats, but at least it was about something serious. You know, it was about war. It was about the king... trying to
I mean, that's another thing that annoyed me. I just felt like these biopic type things always use history as a crutch, and it used it. It didn't bother to earn its thing. It just shows you Hitler and goes, "That's going to create an emotional reaction." And oh, it's the war. It didn't give
maybe
me a sense
right.
of the war at all. I felt it just says, "Oh, now it's the war, but this guy's story is more important. Let's hope he can learn to talk while all these little working class people die."
Yeah, but it wasn't about them.
I know it wasn't about them, but it used that the magnitude.
Do you not think
of
it was
them.
Interesting to see it a war kind of from that kind of point of view, from the King of England?
I think
point
it was.
View.
It was. That I understand. I think that's a film worthy of being made. I just don't think it was a necessarily particularly eloquent version of the film, despite what it pretended to be. I think
did it stutter a little bit.
I think it did. I think it. There was a.
Did you really not pick up on that, Luke?
I did, yeah. But I just kind of wanted to run right over it and hope nobody else did. But now we've made a big point of it, so we can't do that. But I think it, like the writing of it was just predictable, and it was predictable in a way that wasn't satisfying. And
so, what did you want it to be really soul destroying at the end, and that he fucked
no,
up?
No, I wanted him to do it. I just
I
didn't want there to be so many scenes that just felt so false, and I just were in there because they were in like because this is what happens in a movie that tries to be respected would have. I didn't like that aspect to it. I felt it was written and shot in a very much look how great we are, respect kind of our authority kind of way, and I found that to be a bit like cynical. And I mean, maybe like you said, maybe I just have like a massive, like really angry day and just went in there and just was like, no, I'm gonna hate this film. But no, I legitimately was not as impressed as everybody else, and I felt like, you know, everyone's praising it, so I'm gonna, you know, do our best.
Fair enough.
Okay, sorry.
I got rinsed there. I
feel like you and Colin Firth both got rinsed.
No, I would like to say the thing that made it like a good film was the performances. The performances were excellent.
Yeah.
And any Oscar nominations they get, I'm fine with. But, you know, I just had problems with the film itself. But people are going to forget the film itself because it's about the performances. Whatever. So we'll move on to the next. We've got a few more new... I wanted to quickly do Season of the Witch. Because...
Oh.
This is the real film of the week, I feel. It's just no one's paying it attention because it comes out in the same week as 127 Hours and King's Speech. But I think this is the real landmark work here. So, you know, it's got Hellboy and Nick Cage as these medieval warriors who kind of have to transport a witch across the country in like a wooden cage. And obviously, because she's a witch, she couldn't figure out a way around it.
She's
a
sexy
cage.
Witch.
She is, obviously.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
the only kind of witch. And it just, you know.
When you said it was Hellboy and Nick Cage. I'd literally like to see the movie where it's the same story, but it was just Hellboy and Nick Cage as himself doing all this
Nick
stuff.
Nick Cage, Bad Lieutenant.
Yeah.
Literally, Nick Cage is just bored. He looks like, oh man, I need
to. It's National Treasure.
It's National
one of
Treasure,
Nick
Cage.
It's knowing Nick Cage.
The thing is, this kind of Nick Cage only appeared about 5 years ago, but he literally.
Because he got bankrupt about 5 years
exactly,
ago.
Exactly, but he used to do paycheck movies and he'd be ridiculous in them.
Yeah.
But now he does them and he just is bored, and I feel he was kind of like that. I kind of liked him and Ron Perlman on screen. That was kind of interesting pairing, and Perlman, I think, was better than Nick Cage here. He was kind of abusing and he was kind of funny.
It wouldn't actually surprise me if Season of the Witch was finished ages ago.
Oh, I think it was.
One of those releases.
I remember
he made in that period where he just needed shitloads of money.
You need to pay for his castles.
And now he's like, oh great, I'm finally on a run of respectability with Kick-Ass and like Bad Lieutenant, and now they release Season of the Witch. Cheers.
I mean,
guys.
It's not the worst film. Well, it kind of is in the last 10 minutes.
You gave it 3 out of 10.
I did. It got
it's pretty much the worst.
If it hadn't ended the way it did, it probably would have been 4. And that you know, that's not the worst film. And like the kind of when they're just going across the city and they're dying one by one. That was all right. It was very predictable, but it wasn't terrible.
Do you know what I read? Solomon Kane was a superior film.
I would probably agree with that. As much as I hated Solomon Kane, but it is probably better than this.
And that's got Purefoy instead of Nicolas Cage.
I know. But
how do you feel about that?
Purefoy at least had the decency to be terrible by being over the top. Nick Cage just looks like he's, you know, high. And it's just like, oh, right, I have to go to... And it really, really doesn't make an impression at all. I kind of like the person who played the witch. She was kind of good in a very calm kind of TV movie kind of way, and that was kind of fun, but then they turned her into a CGI monster, so, you know.
Why the hell not?
My favourite thing that movies do, when they turn interesting villains, or at least half-interesting villains, the CGI, really bad CGI monsters.
Because they need to up the stakes.
They do, they need to up the stakes, but it just ends up making it worse, and it just, they all look terrible.
So is she just a villain, then?
She just, there's meant to be ambiguity there, but they're so, it's so stupid.
Because the trailer made it seem a bit like, the whole point of the film is, ooh, is she evil?
I think it tries to be that, but it just doesn't have the skill, and it's trying to be ambiguous, but then she's so obviously evil.
I mean, just from the all I'm basing this on is the trailer. I'm sure you're right, it is rubbish and everything. But the visuals kind of look nice.
It did. I mean, I think it...
I like that setting. That
it created the place kind of well. I mean, there's the kind of a thing going around that every single movie set in the Middle Ages automatically has to be rubbish. And it's hard to argue with that considering the track record. But I think it could make a really interesting movie if someone could do it right. But everyone else...
How about a word for Stephen Graham?
Oh man, I just want to mention this because I don't understand why this happened. I literally was trying to figure out logically in my head. I don't see how anyone's come to this conclusion. Stephen Graham, who's Liverpudlian, which is a place in England, right? There's an American accent in this movie. And this movie is set in the Middle Ages, so America doesn't exist.
What kind of American accent are we talking about?
It's to Al Capone.
Oh,
it's him from Public Enemy.
I want to see
that was awful in Public Enemy.
I know, literally. So
as
far as I can tell, I reckon the director didn't know he was... He only knows him from Public Enemies, and I think that's why he's been hired here. And he just goes, oh man, do that character from Public Enemies, I love that guy. And he's like, has this like Chicago 1920s accent in Middle Ages, because even if it's not England, right, it's Europe. So why is an English actor doing an American accent?
Or was there anybody else doing American accent?
I think Nick Cage pretty much was, but I'm expecting that, you know, because it's Nick Cage. What I understand the reason is because he doesn't give a shit. What is the reason that Stephen Graham is doing an American accent? He's like, I don't know. Is he
maybe they're just like, wait a minute, we can't have Nick Cage being the only American in this film.
Maybe he's being meta, and he's just like, I'm Stephen Graham, and I was in This Is England.
And then there's Ron Perlman, who's been American in there as well.
Yeah,
everyone's just American in Europe.
Yeah, apparently, maybe it was just like I think it's just because the director.
Did America didn't even exist at that point?
I don't think it did. No, not at all. In fact, there were no white people in North America, so it doesn't make any sense at all. And it was ridiculous. And it's just the thing, it was such a strong, noticeable accent as well. It didn't like it blended in. It was like it was unbelievable. And it's still to this.
Sounds like some nice comic relief.
But not intentionally. And it just became.
So it wasn't bad enough to enjoy because it was really bad.
Well, it kind of was in places, particularly the end where you know there were like zombified, plague-stricken monks that all knew kung fu and came from nowhere. Well, basically they go to this monastery. I don't care about spoiling this because no one's going to see it. And they go to this monastery and there's like all the monks that are supposed to cure the witch of her witchiness are already all plague infested and dead.
Kung fu plague.
And then basically they get risen by the witch and then they all are like, ha! And there's like a 10-minute fight sequence where they kill zombie monks.
Wow. You're doing is making me want
to... That was kind of funny.
Al Capone... Zombie like kung fu monks. I want to see this film.
Hellboy.
The thing is, it should be much more awesome in its badness than it is, but it ends up just being kind of boring. And I don't quite know how that happened, but no, it's terrible. Don't see this film.
What's the director done other than this? Do you know?
Swordfish.
Oh. Okay.
With the great Halle Berry.
Swordfish was bad, but it wasn't atrocious.
No, and he also did Whiteout. If any of you saw that.
No.
He's just basically a director for hire who makes these things when nobody else will. So you know. It's not his fault. It's just a terrible film.
We should move on.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
We've talked about Season of the Witch probably more than 127 hours.
Yeah, we've got a couple that we probably did, but it's worth it. We've got a couple more releases, but we'll do these real sharp here. So we've got The Next 3 Days, which is the next film by Paul Haggis, who basically, after winning 1,000 Oscars, disappeared off the face of the earth. And this just kind of bothers me, because I think both of his films after Crash have been better than Crash, but because the backlash for Crash has been so intense, his career has been ruined. Because there's that.
What was his film after Crash?
In the Valley of Ella, and then this, which is like, this was basically Paul Haggis.
Crash is crap, by the way.
No, it really is, and I'm not going to defend it. But
I feel like I could defend it a little bit. It's not
terrible,
bad.
But it just got immensely overrated, and obnoxious.
Being Brokeback Mountain was disgraceful.
That was disgraceful. It had no business getting.
But I don't think it was like, you know, terrible. It wasn't Season of the Witch.
It was like a 6 or 7 film.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
The fact that it got so colossally overrated, I think almost the worst thing about it is Paul Haggis himself. Because when he won, he felt like he was such an indie, daring piece of work that finally.
that's what everyone hates about Crash, really, isn't it? It's so preachy. And it thinks it's like
renegade. It's like the most mainstream film.
Like we're supposed to turn around and go, "What? Racism is bad?" And then, like,
yeah. Oh man. So he's racist.
You're trying to sell us a message. We were already on board.
No one's on either side of this issue. But yeah. So since then, I think he's actually got better. He's got less trite. There's less lecturing going on. I think both of the subsequent films.
Because I think about Crash is that it's quite like it's dramatically it works. It's quite an affecting film in that way.
Yeah.
Like when you're not thinking about the message.
I know the performances are great.
And
Matt Dillon, I remember being very, very good.
And it's quite cinematic.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of tension.
The scene with him and Thandie Newman.
So clearly he's got like
is the thing. And I feel like people have been so outraged by that moment, rightly so. But they've been so outraged. His career has basically been ruined by the internet. And I think this might be the first case of this happening. Because it basically, that was seemed so unjustified that people decided that anything Paul Haggis ever does isn't worth their time anymore. And
even when he's clearly got some talent.
Exactly,
right?
Like the follow-up to an Oscar-winning writer-director's film should be huge, that should be a huge deal, but that film came and went, nobody noticed, and next 3 days even more so. And this is quite a good, I can't remember the last good thriller that was in the cinema that wasn't terrible, and this is probably an example of that. It was exciting. It moved like quickly.
What accent is Crow going for?
He does an American, which I think he can do quite well.
Yeah, he's fine at that.
He's fine. You know, you saw LA Confidential. He's all right in this character. So he kind of is good. Elizabeth Banks is good. Liam Neeson's in it for one scene for some reason, and it was just it was all right. And it was just feel like nobody cares because it's Paul Haggis, and I think that backlash on the right has just gone a little bit too far, and that it's now made this fairly. I mean, he wrote Million Dollar Baby. People love that film.
He narrated Arrested Development.
Ron Howard.
Oh, Ron Howard. I always get Paul Haggis and Ron Howard mixed up.
They're both kind of bald and creepy, looking like Freddy Krueger. They kind of do.
Yeah.
But no, this I think he needs a bit of a reevaluation. I think people need to stop with that now.
I mean, his films haven't been amazing.
They're not amazing. This is like just a good thriller, but it deserves.
But they're good, you know.
He deserves to be told he's okay.
Yeah.
And nobody's doing it.
He deserves to be told that he's validated, that he deserves to be making films.
Has it got good action in it?
It has. It's like the final like half an hour is really quite tense and well executed. So that was quite impressive. And I just, you know,
he also created Due South.
He did, which is the real victory.
Which is the real amazing.
The real work.
What a show!
I was joking, but I genuinely loved that show when I was young.
Yeah, so did I.
It was pretty awesome.
I didn't because I was cool.
It was all about the husky.
Yeah. I liked the new Avengers of Superman with Terry Hatcher, and that was awesome.
Yeah, watch that also. Don't worry.
Dean Cain.
Dean Cain, the
Hawaiian Superman,
inevitably Oscar-winning actor that is Dean Cain, shall we say? But there's one more film which I'll do really quickly, which is it's kind of a funny story, just kind of another one of those indie kids that kind of is trouble and then learns about.
Got Zach Galifianakis.
It has in a really good performance. That is, I'm sure people got the name from that, right?
Zach Galifianakis.
That'll do it.
Zach
he's really good, and I just feel like in his comic roles, he's kind of got a really specific kind of thing that he does that's going to get annoying in that kind of Jack Black way quite quickly. But he's actually a really good actor, and I think like it's noticeably in this. And if you saw Up in the Air or like the TV show he's on, which is Bored to Death, it's like
he was even quite small role, but he's even all right in Youth and Revolt.
I think he's actually interested in being a good actor by the amount of work that he does, and I think this is probably the best performance I've seen him give. It's a very kind of okay film, but that was an aspect of it that really impressed me.
So is this the kind of film that's going to have acoustic guitars as the soundtrack?
Yep. And like,
I think
photo montages.
That sums it up, really.
It does. I mean, the one message I did like from it is that basically it's about him learning to get over himself, and basically he comes to the conclusion that all his indiness was stupid, and I kind of like that. But it is very much that.
That's how Garden State should have ended.
Oh, yeah. God, I would, yeah.
It was like, oh man, I was so self. That's literally what his self-revelation, as they say, is literally that he was self-indulgent. And that was kind of cool. I can't remember that being done in this kind of film before, but it is very, very.
But it was
very
the film self-indulgent. And just
a little bit. There was one too many.
There's some weird implosion. when the film realises, the film's character realises.
Yeah, it was kind of a few too many quirky photo montages for my taste, but, you know, it was alright, not obnoxious, but not really much else needs to be said about it. So, that's the new releases in quite a dense week, so I'll move on to
Breaking Bad.
So, in advance, I mean, I saw this pretty much as soon as I heard of it, but Before you went into it, what were you kind of anticipating? Were you something amazing or something just kind of...
Well, I'll let Jamie go first, because I actually stumbled across it, like, on FX, like, before, ages ago, before I heard about it, before I got... I don't know, people at uni weren't talking about it, or the people I knew weren't talking about it. So I kind of watched a few episodes before I even knew what it was. And it was enough to hold my attention, but I wasn't going, Breaking Bad's on. Yeah. No. I'd get home and I'd be flicking around and be, oh, like, Breaking Bad's on in 5 minutes, I might watch it.
Yeah,
that was the first season though.
So it didn't grab you in the way like Mad Men.
It did not grab me like the first episode of Mad Men. I was just hooked straight away.
Yeah.
Whereas the first episode of Breaking Bad, I thought, yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah,
I thought it was good.
I think I had a similar. What was your kind of like?
Well, I think we've like because you mentioned Breaking Bad. With Breaking Bad, it's like a consistent level. Whereas with Mad Men. With Breaking Bad, it kind of starts good and gets better and better.
Yeah, it really does.
I think it's the only like really serious dramatic series that I can think of that every season is improvement on the last, and I can't think of an example of that definitively. And it just feels like there's always that ambition to get better and better and better.
Yeah,
that even Mad Men I don't think has, and I think that is.
I think it's hard for Mad Men. I think it's
the thing is
because this first and second season is so amazing.
Yeah, if Mad Men had a bad first season,
but
it'd be even,
what my
even
feeling
better,
is that Mad Men is so certain of its greatness, rightly so, that it doesn't necessarily have the ambition to ever prove. And I always feel Breaking Bad thinks it worse than it is, which makes it better than it could be in a way, because it's always trying to do something you're not expecting. It's always working really hard to give you something you've never seen before.
Yeah.
And that is an aspect of it. But we'll try and do this chronologically. Yeah, so what do you think of the pilot?
The pilot is really good. It's a really strong pilot, I think. Like, I think I saw the pilot, I thought that was really good. Then I tuned in next week, and it kind of dipped a little bit, I think, for a few episodes. I think, like, 2, 3, and 4, maybe I was a little... Maybe 4 I liked a lot, but I don't know. I still just... It felt kind of tame. It feels
very small scale.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one thing which it gets more.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, season one is Walt's family and Jesse.
Yeah. And also, one thing I would say that really affects season one, I think, is that it kind of... It doesn't take Jesse seriously. It doesn't take itself as seriously as it does later on. It kind of feels more lighthearted. It feels more like kind of bringing on comedy drama. Like, look how ridiculous this science teacher is.
Yeah.
And also, I think look how ridiculous Jesse is. Like, I really don't like his performance in the first season. I have big problems with it. I think it's too over the top.
Yeah, well, that's the thing in the pilot. I feel like outside of Walt, like, much of the characterization is a bit kind of like that. Because I kind of think the same is true for Hank.
Yeah.
In the way that his character is portrayed, and he just kind of is like, oh, he's really, really brash, kind of, you know, Vic Mackey like police detective.
And then Marie as well.
Marie
was like that for about a season and a half.
Yeah, in
she's
the
only
first
gotten
season.
Really good.
I mean, that is the most unfortunate plot line of Breaking Bad. I think her little kleptomaniac thing that she did.
It just felt like a bit weak.
She's on the show, and we need to give her something to do. Yeah. I'm not a fan of that usual plot line.
And I just thought, you're right, the characterization, it was a bit flat, it was a bit two dimensional.
I agree about Aaron Paul. I don't think Aaron Paul is very good in the first season at all. I think
he's annoying.
He's mugging, almost. And I think that's, particularly in the pilot, I think he kind of tones it down episode to episode. But in the pilot, it's a legitimately bad performance.
Yeah.
And it kind of does take you out of it. But, you know, you watch Bryan Cranston and you're hooked. Even
for
the first
episode. Is amazing.
It's
a
great performance
instantly.
Yeah.
So,
and it is like, I was criticising it, but it is still, it's good television.
Oh no, it's absolutely. I think it's like a solid, intriguing. It's maybe a little trite, the pilot. I think the way it kind of, the flash forwards and the flashbacks, but there's like the image of him standing in this, like, in the desert with the gun. I remember that being like, yes, this is a show I want to watch. And it's like, that kind of stuck with me. Like,
I think the first season did enough to really like keep me interested. But
I think I mean, what do we feel the way it kind of followed on to the pilot? Because rather than like jump into a narrative, the next like 2-3 episodes were about dealing with the like immediate consequences, and it seems like that's something everything else would have brushed over.
That's what Breaking Bad is.
I don't think it worked entirely in this instance, but that was kind of like an example of what it was going to be, and that was kind of a mission statement.
I think the whole first series, it is really finding its feet.
It is
trying to work out exactly what it wants to be. Like,
exactly. I mean, I think it actually kind of sags in the middle. I think there's a really great episode where nothing happens, but everyone finds out it's cancer, and that's quite dramatically satisfying. But there's one after that that just, it feel like the pace is not necessarily got right in the first series as it progresses. It does, admittedly, I think it has one really great episode, and that's the introduction of Tuco one, where it has one of the more memorable Walt Weiss like badass moments where he's like,
yeah, where he's walking.
He walks in, he's got like the Mercury, and he basically in slow motion, man, just basically nuke the whole place, and that was kind of
that was pretty cool.
That was awesome.
And I don't know what it was though. I think maybe partly it's just because in the first season like that, you're not really as invested in the characters as you are by the end. So like when they're dealing with the consequences of it, you're not really, you don't care as much as you do later on.
It doesn't
feel as dramatic.
So as the conclusion to the first season of the whole, what do you think of like the introduction of Tuco to the world? Do you think that was effective or?
I laughed out loud though. I thought it was hilarious. Like,
it was very, very big, but I think it worked in the way they kind of treated him, and we'll get onto that in season two in a minute. But I think he was awesome because he wasn't around too long. And I think he worked because he was in and then out.
Any more episodes with him.
It would have been like, you don't really kind of... The thing is, I think it outgrew him very quickly. The kind of character that he was would make sense.
In season three, he would have been lost.
He's a bit of a cartoon character.
He is, it kind of made sense in that kind of fairly cartoonish season one world, where everyone was a bit broader than they were in the later years. But, I mean, I like season one. There's a lot of very great scenes and very interesting moments and great ideas. It's not, like, the completion of all these things, but it's, like, the... Like definition of a promising series.
It's promising. It was a little bit. It felt it kind of lacked confidence.
Yeah,
it didn't quite know what it wanted to be yet. But I think it was.
What were your feelings on Skylar in season one? Because Skylar is a figure of fan hate. Everyone seems to hate Skylar.
I think people might hate Skylar because Walt's the main character.
Yeah, why should we tell him what to do?
Just let him deal drugs.
No,
really, really morally.
They always want Rita off Dexter. Where basically they're just in a they don't make an impact. They don't know what he's doing, and they're fine with it. That's what they want.
I mean, what do they expect her to act like?
I don't know. I think it's a really good performance, even at the beginning, and it was one of the more interesting characters I think in the first season. But we'll move on to the second one now, because I think instantly the beginning of season two, where it begins with that flash forward, and it's like instantly again, it's you can tell something has like risen up a little bit, where it's like the bears in the water, and it's like
the whole. I think the whole scale feels bigger. The first series, it might as well be like a village that they're in. It doesn't feel like a world. It feels like this tiny suburb. And then you expand to like Mexico and world everything. Building,
yeah,
like,
it really becomes really.
It like, becomes a world stronger. Instead of just a place.
Yeah,
I think actually you can it's not just from the get go, the start of season two. I think it's not just getting better each season. Season two, it really starts to get better at each episode. That's really satisfying watching a television series.
I think what was a great advantage of it in a way, because the first season got cut off by the writer's strike. I think it worked really well, because basically season two got to begin with a finale. It got to begin with a two-part finale to season one, where they deal with Tuco, and that was kind of made it so gripping instantly, because shows don't get to do that usually, and that kind of made it come out like flying. So it comes out flying, and then it gets to do all the deep stuff as it progresses, and that was very... kind of lucky thing they bought into, because I reckon if they hadn't been for the writer's strike, Tuco would have been season one. I think
for season two, the moment I kind of realised this is this is really is a good show.
For me, the
episode with
Grilled with the Tuco in the desert was the one that you start going, hang on a minute, like this could be something really, really good here.
Was that with the bell?
That was the bell.
Don Salamanca.
That was an amazing device, that bell.
With a great performance with no dialogue of Mark really Margulies. As it went on, it's almost one of the better performances in the show. It's just the rage he communicates without saying anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's also the start of Hank getting some.
It was, I think that was the first episode where I was kind of went, oh my god, this could actually be a very, very good show if it keeps going along this path. And that, it was just, it felt like a film. It really did. It was like.
Yeah, like, it. I know a lot of people compared it, but it's very Coen Brothers.
It did, yeah. That was the first, like, people always said Coen Brothers, but that was the first time I really noticed it. And I think because of the nature of Tuco's character, that it was almost. It served that actor really well, that the way they did that. Because he was just this monster, wasn't it? It was basically a monster movie for an episode. Yeah. Where, like, oh my god, we can't step on this or he's going to kill it. It was really tense.
It was painfully tense.
It was, like, really, really strong. And even though that performance is massive, they've kind of found a way to do it really justice. And,
it's so huge, that performance.
It literally is. It's enormous. But because of that episode and the way it was structured, it made perfect sense.
And
I think if he'd gone out in any other way, you would think, oh, that character was a bit... But because of that, it made him like very impactful. I think he was basically four episodes. I think beginning season two in that way was very good and not dragging him out. Just basically going, right, this is that, now we're done.
And then it's dealing with the consequences.
And the third episode and the fourth... I think the fourth episode, where nothing happens, is almost my favourite episode of Breaking Bad of season two. Because it's down, and basically it's about... his wife blanking him and Jesse getting kicked out of his house, and it's basically this extended really, and it gets this really, really intense, dark place, and it just the bit where he falls through the toilet, and then it's like, that's really
funny. That episode, that's,
I think it's amazing, and it's like the first time I thought Breaking Bad could really do drama like that. I'd never seen it like do an episode where like really coherently it's about the characters and it's mature and didn't have any irony.
I also
and it
think
just
read
really
that's
well.
Like that's almost the start of Aaron Paul getting really.
It was. That was the first, again, episode that you start to be impressed by Aaron Paul, and you start to go, hang on, he's actually getting better here.
Because throughout season two, I really felt every episode, I really felt like, actually, he's quite good, because I actively disliked him in the first season.
Oh, yeah, yeah. His performance, he tones it down, and in season two, he really starts understanding.
And I also think
his
character, I think it's a better written character.
It is. Right? I think the writing takes a massive step up into season. I think that episode is an example of it, and where they managed to make nothing happening fascinating. And I think that's the mark of a great show or a great film. Even.
I think, that episode's a really good example of like of kind of how Breaking Bad works, in that they kind of write themselves into a corner or write themselves into a point where every single thing, like normally shows, and
it would just
really,
be
really annoys
him
me,
and we move on,
and it really, really annoys me. But shows where someone, you know, there'll be some reason, something will come in for one episode, which will stop them from finding out something which they should have found out.
Yeah.
And instead, they just find it out, and they have to deal with it.
And it's just
like so much more refreshing, and you just haven't got a clue where it's going.
Because they never cop out, do they? They always just follow through with what would happen and what should happen does happen all the time.
So what do you think about the, like, the middle kind of three episodes of season two? Basically where it's kind of building the drug empire kind of episodes, and it's like there's a lot of plot in those. But again, they always seem to make time.
I really like those episodes.
Because
those episodes were really good for building on characters like Combo and Skinny Pig.
Exactly, and
it
was like you said, world building, which it didn't do in season one. It really did well in that kind of mid season two.
Just to refresh my memory, at this point does Jesse's girlfriend come into it?
It was around this, I think, episode five, where basically Kristen Ritter, who plays Jane,
it just really expanded, didn't it?
Yeah,
it did, and it's like, and again, it didn't just do it at the expense of character, which is the worst thing you can do. It's into that. It had that episode with Jesse and the kid in the house, which I don't think is a perfect episode, but
I think it's a brilliant episode.
It's a really good episode for Aaron Paul, you start to go, oh my god, this performance is getting as good as like Bryan Cranston.
It's like a huge difference. I think he really improves.
And I think it, in a way, season two always kind of did that. It kind of was making Jesse kind of the hero of the story, and White in a way the bad guy.
Well, that's kind of the cool thing about the show, isn't it? In general, like it goes that way. It makes Jesse the kind of moral.
He's the moral center of the show, and I think that episode with the kid was the first time that really began to be something like, oh my god, my surrogate here is actually Jesse and not Walter. Kind of like, it was a cool thing
and
to do.
And that also makes Walt more badass, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
And that's something which really has been getting expanded on the whole time. It's about how Walt is getting good at this. You know, this is what Walt, you know, is meant
born to do.
Yeah, was born to do, and he's a lot more cut out for it than Jesse, which is ironic when you see the first season. I mean, Jesse has a heart and a conscience.
Yeah, I know. And
it's like, which Walt
and
doesn't
really
have anymore.
Well, and it really felt like an organic growth, because he's almost like a little boy trapped in like an adult's body. He just has such a simple, unbreakable sense of like morality. He almost doesn't want, but he just has anyway.
Yeah.
And it just is like, you just can't be a bad guy, because he's such an innately an innocent. Yeah. But I think that, again, they managed to communicate very well. But I think at this point, you were kind of, the complaint was, it was kind of getting a bit like dark, and there was like the episode obviously with Hank in the Mexican desert with Danny Trejo, and it was like, whoa.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And it was like, well, not that Danny Trejo particularly does anything except have an awesome death.
Yeah, it's one of the best deaths ever.
It really is. It's like, wow. But I think at that point, you're like, oh, there's not really any comic relief. It's not really going anywhere. And the episode after that, it addresses every complaint you have. They bring in Saul, who is like,
oh, he is amazing.
It literally is. It was a perfect moment they had to do. You go, oh my god, it's not really anyone who's funny in Breaking Bad. And then he comes in, and it just, he's not only is he funny, but he fits, and he's a real human, like a real character, and not just a clown.
What I like about Saul, when he first came in, I was like, oh, you know, he's really funny, he's a good character. And I was like, but is he going to get cheap? Is he going to be? But then
they make him smart. He's good at what he does.
Yeah, exactly. He's a good lawyer.
He's a good dirty lawyer.
He's a clown when it serves him. He's a clown when he wants to be a clown. He's not. He's actually really like.
I love the scene where Jesse, I think it's actually in the third series, where Jesse buys his house back. Like the way Saul Goodman deals with the other lawyer.
Oh, that's awesome!
He's brilliant.
It's a really good performance, and I think at this point it was great, because that episode is kind of funny, and it's kind of exciting in the way they had the whole fake Heisenberg scene, and that was one of like the more like tensely executed scenes of those in season two.
But
the way he brought into his character into the world, and again, it was world building. They're expanding. They're going, all right, we've done these guys. We need to bring more people into it. And it just, that was such a right note of character to bring into it.
It was such a good move to go for that.
And again, even after that comes the episode, which I think is many people's favourite even to this day, where they go out into the desert and basically they go and cut it becomes Flight of the Phoenix. And it just is...
Oh, because the battery's been out.
And basically, that's a great episode. That is a great episode. And it's, again, it's sort of a bottle episode, but not really.
It's a character episode.
It is, and it's another one of those episodes where you just go, oh my god, this is doing things I never thought it would do. Who would have thought a show about like a crime syndicate is going to do a show about people stranded in the desert, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my god, it was just that period towards the end of season two where every single episode, oh my god, I'm not expecting that.
I think it was then that you kind of, it goes like, it's good. Very good, and now it's just fucking amazing.
Yeah,
like, and I think it kind of starts towards the end of season two, and then carries on all the way through.
I think the episode in the desert. I mean, I think the Tuco one and the, like I said, Down is very good, but I think the one in the desert is where the fucking amazing transition comes in, like undeniably. Even if you were having any problems with it, the minute you see that episode, you're like, this is a great TV show.
Yeah.
And there's not really anything around that. And that is like an amazing... I mean, it looks great. That's a beautifully looking episode.
Yeah.
And it just like...
And the episode...
It's just great.
Is kind of everything that Breaking Bad's about. It's funny, but it's also really serious.
It takes the
emotional
turn. It's kind of like flying that way, where it's funny and they're getting things done, and then all of a sudden, bam, it's really
intense. I don't think there's another show as well with that, like, kind of as much tension. Curb Your Enthusiasm maybe has that much tension.
Yeah.
But, you know, that kind of grimacing... Cringing, oh god, what's gonna happen?
Like, you know, and they don't, it's not like a reveal. You know, the minute Jesse puts the keys in,
it's just like, because he is a fucking idiot, like,
he pours the water on the generator,
yeah.
And I like
and
how
the world comes out with it. It's really good comic timing,
it really is.
Like,
and what's great about the Jesse character is that he's still an idiot to this day, but they've managed to make him a respectable and serious character in spite of that. They've
the
never
first
taken
season, he was an idiot who you laughed at, and you don't laugh at him anymore, you care about him and you think he's good,
but he's still an idiot, which is great.
He's still an idiot.
I love how they've not taken that away but made it almost like heartbreaking.
And he occasionally has redeeming things.
He does, particularly in season three. But I think towards the end of season two, there was kind of, it kind of, after that episode, it kind of goes back into the build towards the end. What do you think of the introduction of Gus? Because he comes in episode 11, I think. And I think he doesn't really, like, he doesn't storm in a way that Saul does. You kind of go, oh, okay.
That's
good. That's
yeah,
the point,
that's the best.
It?
Yeah.
That is Gus as well.
Yeah.
You know, that
he doesn't want to be known.
It feels very deliberate because, you don't even know who
he is.
He's just
like
the manager of the
There are other stories, you know, there's the whole thing with Jane going on. You don't really notice him. But, again, I think you could tell it was going to be a good performance, but there's not much of him to go on in season two. So, what do we think about the way the Jane story is wrapped up and that particular scene?
I think that's the scene where
Walt
dies.
One of the more amazing, scenes in Breaking
Bad. It's hard
to
watch.
It's horror. Yeah, it's horrifying. I remember, because I remember thinking that season two was kind of... I think after episode 9, I think episode 10 is very good, but I don't think episode 11 went anywhere. And I was kind of going, oh my god, it's going to fudge the landing. And then that happened at the end of episode 12, and I was like, oh wow, that is amazing.
There are a lot of points in Breaking Bad where Walter kind of changes, or where you can see that...
That was a point of no
return,
wasn't
it? Yeah, exactly. There's a few in Breaking Bad, and that was certainly one of the big points of no return, is that... He's changed forever now.
Yeah.
You know,
I think it was made even more horrifying and perfect in that he wasn't just obvious he killed her because she got in his way. He allowed her to die somehow worse as like a dramatic device.
I mean, that changes him more than when he kills the guy in the basement.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you can always kind of make a lame argument for self-defense. But this time, that you can't do that.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can say that he didn't kill her, but I think he did.
Once again, this clever brain guy, because it's not clear cut. I don't think, because you can say
it's a debate you can say that
you know, what do you do in that situation? It's a panicky situation, it happened very quickly,
but
at the same time, you know deep down, and he knows deep down that he could have done something, he could have turned her over for God's sakes, like,
and he just, it's just the scene where he's crying and he's doing this horrific thing and he's crying as it's happened, and it's just like, you are a monster, and it just literally is that moment where that, oh my god, my hero is like a psychopath.
And what almost makes it worse is that at that point, like, you can kind of feel like Walt does really like Jesse, like, they've got a good, strong relationship, and yet he knows how in love with Jane Jesse is.
But
he doesn't care, he does care, but it's just not important enough as he is, as his
drug empire.
Exactly.
It?
Yeah.
He's such a selfish character.
He's like I think there's maybe one act of selfishness from Walter White, and then he manages to turn that into an act of selfishness as it progresses. But we'll get to that later. Yeah. So what do we think about the end of season two? A lot of people are very irritated with the way the finale kind of wrapped up. It's the plane crash.
I thought that was amazing.
Because
it's
been teasing that with flash forwards all the way through the series, and people just kind of assumed it was going to be some big gangster showdown. And it wasn't.
Yeah, but that's why it's perfect.
And it did work for me in a way.
Did anybody think that was going to be a plane crash?
No, I didn't. I certainly didn't.
Caused by
the dad. I thought
it was
going to be some kind of chemical explosion or something.
I mean, what do you think the way they
executed mid-air collision as well? It was just so perfect.
With James' father. How do you feel about that character? Was that, because that was brought in quite late.
I think credit to the actor. He doesn't have that many scenes, and he's got, I think it's his face.
Yeah.
He's just got such a like
sad face.
A sad face. Yeah.
He managed to make it work.
Yeah.
I think again in the episode, I kind of like how it after the season two was all about establishing this gangster world. The last episode kind of again moved away from that and took it back to the Walt and Jesse. And like again, Aaron Paul is really, really. So no, and we seem to be praying Aaron Paul much more than Bryan Cranston, which is funny.
It's because Bryan Cranston is a given.
It's just a given that he's going to be great. But he is great in season two, and I think he's still the strongest thing about the show in season two.
I think season three is the year where you think. Yeah. I think Jesse was the better performance almost.
Almost, I'd be tempted to say.
He's almost there.
So after the end of season two, season three comes out, and I'll do the first four episodes of season three in a gunshot because I feel like they're all kind of the same in that they were all about build.
Yeah.
And a lot of, I remember being like when they were watching them week to week, people weren't happy and they felt the Skyler hate intensified in those four episodes more than any other time in the series. And I don't understand. I thought like Skyler in the beginning of that was the best thing about
the
show.
She was definitely.
And it was a great performance.
We should just talk about just that first.
The first scene of the third series
with the. They're Mexican, they're cousins, aren't they?
Yeah, and they're just, everyone's crawling through the desert.
Cousins.
That's so funny.
You don't know what the fuck is going on.
And the weird, creepy shack with the skeletons. Yeah. You're like, wow. Breaking Bad knows how to give you some strong visuals that you
don't
know.
No one would have guessed that opening,
exactly.
That's stronger than the teddy bear in the
Definitely. It's kind of like a puzzle, but like the teddy bear thing, but it just, in a way, it resolved itself just in that moment. And it was just, it was really, great introduction for those two characters.
Yeah,
how Coen Brothers are those two characters?
Oh, very much so. I mean,
the third season is so Coen Brothers.
Yeah, definitely. It becomes much more epic.
It's a movie, I think.
It's cinematic.
Episode where it ends with them walking away from an exploding car. This is awesome.
Absolutely, and the first episode had enough of that gangster thing to keep you interested. But I feel like the next three episodes moved away from it. I mean, it had a little bit of Gus and him kind of embracing it, but he moves away from it and tries to win back his family. It's the collapsing of the family, isn't it? Between him and Skyler, and just like a really intense war as they break up. And I just think it's really
well acted. There's also a bit of, in the first scene, there's a bit of relief because Walt's now moved out, his secret's out. There's kind of, you feel like this story move on.
That was almost one of my favourite things that they had Skyler find out. Because that would have got annoying. And they just did it. They're like, forget it, we're going to have her find out now. Otherwise, you're just not. Making her an intelligent character, it's not believable that she wouldn't have figured this out. So it's just, that was great.
And as she slowly starts to participate more in his
crime. And it was great for her character those first four episodes.
When she looks up money laundering on Wikipedia.
That's great. I think a lot of people praise the male actors in this show, but I think particularly in season three, Anna Gunn gives the performance every bit as good as them.
I think Marie's really good in season three.
She is
very good. But
I mean, with the Hank stuff, obviously. I mean, she doesn't have anywhere near as big a role.
She doesn't have a storyline, but I feel like she became much more mature character and
likeable as well. Much more likable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does Anna Gunn get any...
She doesn't get anything.
Any award love?
No, it's just great. It's just Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul. But I feel like she definitely deserved it for the beginning of this season. Because in the way the character becomes even more unlikable, but she's almost like a fascinating anti-hero every bit as much as he is.
Yeah.
And I think that was something that not necessarily was the case in the first
season. She is a bit of a hypocrite as well.
Oh, absolutely. But I think people thinking that Skyler has negative characteristics is unforgivable, whereas Walt having them in much more thing is somehow awesome. And I think that she became a really fascinating character. I'm not saying she's the likable hero. She becomes much a worse human being in the series, but I think those four episodes, I think after that she takes a back seat, but she was a really great performance. I wanted to mention that. So after that we get to the mid-season, which is pretty explosive in the way it kind of went down.
I think Hank's got to get a big
Hank
shout
kind of yes because the Hank thing was building over it did not it built kind of over season two and to this moment where
he gets about three episodes which he just owns.
And I think we'll get to the 1 minute in a minute, but I want to quickly talk about the one before it, which is Sunset, and it has that awesome scene in the RV in the junkyard was, again, is one of my favourite scenes in the entire show.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And it's just like, so the tension,
the tension is
like,
insane.
It is insane, because it's just one of those moments where Breaking Bad's not going to have Hank find them in there. Mm. And oh my god, it actually is. It's actually happening right now. Yeah. And you know,
it is so close to happening. It could be any closer.
And you think it is, and you're thinking, oh, they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it.
And they're like out-legaling each other.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so good, because it's so brilliant, because you're like, they've got him, and then he's like, yeah, but actually, this means...
And it's kind of pathetic as well, because Hank should be able to just rip the door
down. But I love how they figure it out, and he's like, oh, I want to get him the right way, because he's such a, like, a moral cop, and then the way they resolve it was almost perfect as well, because of how horrible it was. And it was just the scene where he's in the hospital, and it's just like...
Oh, yeah, I completely forgot
about
that.
And it's just like, oh my god, Walt, you are, again, he just kind of keeps talking
to his own family. Yeah. One arsehole.
To save himself.
He's pretty much evil.
He literally is. He gets worse and worse every year. So we'll get on to 1 minute, which is basically the Hank episode. Now, I think Dean Norris is almost my favourite performance. Not for the whole series, but for this episode. I think he's a character from the... Again, like Jesse, the way... And Aaron Paul, the way he's grown as a performance and a character over the 3 years. It just goes... It goes so far. And I think, like, in this... He's such a mature... He's the hero of Breaking Bad in this episode. I felt more than that. Even more than Jesse.
Yeah.
Because he's just, like... He's such a... The way he kind of just doesn't accept... his own behavior. He does something terrible and he instantly is like, yeah, I did something terrible. Yeah. I'm going to make sure that is...
He's a decent person.
He literally is. It's almost like the first...
He makes mistakes, but he understands these mistakes.
People taking responsibility for their actions is something that's very rare on Breaking Bad. And that's kind of what... In this episode, even though it's kind of an episode you get probably quite often on other shows, it works so much better in this context because of how rarely you're given it.
Yeah.
And it just... It's a really great performance from Dean Norris, and it has the best scene in TV history.
Which
I'm happy to call it as. Which is the way it is, the finale of it.
It is an amazing scene.
Just before we get to that, what did you think of the cousins, and more importantly, the way they were dealt with? Because at the beginning of season 3, you're thinking, these guys are here to the end.
They are basically Terminators, aren't they?
Yeah, they basically are, but they turned out to be misdirection.
I think by getting rid of them, like, not
by
even...
By Hank as well.
It's not even halfway, it's like two. It's like a third in.
I think it's about halfway.
I thought it was brilliant.
It was genius.
A great way to do it, because...
And it just makes Hank sort of awesome.
It does.
Because the whole thing of Breaking Bad is that the most dangerous thing in this universe isn't these psycho twins with an axe, it's Gus.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like,
and the way Gus basically plays these psycho twins with an axe, these unstoppable forces, like they were just idiots.
Which is what they are, basically. Like,
and he just basically, do what I want. And
like
then,
he does that for breakfast every, like, you know, it's just like, completely brushes them over.
Like,
when we're so, like, made to believe they are
all this force and all this power that they have, he just rings somebody.
Yeah.
That's it. He uses a phone, you know.
Because he's just, but that scene, should we just quickly go on before we get into the Gus stuff? Which, again, I think Gus is almost, like, he doesn't get much credibility, but I think it's the performance, it's almost genius of Gus. It's just so quiet. But
back to the twins.
The scene at the end of episode 7, which is basically the 1 minute scene, which is much reported, I think, and everybody basically lost their shit over it. Because it's such it's an action scene in the way it's executed, but it's so tense.
It's
and because
so
it's
tense.
A TV show, the investment, and I think it works so genius because... Hank could die in Breaking Bad, and it's something that
could
happen. It's not like when it's Walt or Jesse, the show can exist without Hank very easily.
Yeah.
And you go into that thinking, oh my god, he's actually going to get killed. He's actually going to die.
The tensest moment, I think, isn't even when they're shooting each other, it's when just after Gus has called him and said, you've got one minute. And he's waiting there, and I'm looking at my watch, shit, it's been a minute, just fucking go.
Do you remember, like,
the four of us
were just, like, go!
literally, I remember thinking in that minute, you're thinking, oh my god, if it's allowing the thought going into your head, right, he's going to die, he's actually going to die right now on the screen, this character that they've done 3 seasons
it's
with.
Almost unbearable to
it
watch.
It is, it's unbearable, you're thinking, this is actually going to happen, it's going to happen in a minute, it's going to happen in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, and then the scene actually
starts.
It's
so powerful, you feel sick.
It does, it makes you ill, and then the scene actually starts, and it's just like really freaking awesome, and it's like...
And he's so fucking cool. When he kills him, he's fumbling for the bullet, it's just so
but
tense.
But then he's posing.
Absolutely nails
I think the moment that I knew he wasn't going to die is when he pulled the gun away from him, when he had him, and he's like, no, it's too easy. And I don't know how, I felt maybe a little bit annoyed about that moment. But I think it was made effective by the way they ended it, and like it's so well acted. And it's a scene that in a movie would be amazing.
Oh yeah,
it would be mind blowing in a film, and it's mind blowing in this context too.
Yeah.
And it just it's I think again it's the show raising its game to something you've never seen before.
No, definitely. That is one of the best scenes of TV I've ever seen.
Like, I think it's my favourite. I can't recall anything working in like,
that well, yeah.
The amount you're invested in it and how tense it is and how like awesome it is at the same time. I can't think of a scene like that.
And, yeah. And the satisfaction at the end when he wins.
Yeah,
I'm so glad they didn't.
Because you don't think he's going to win.
Finally a victory and breaking down.
Yeah,
like,
yes!
And like, the complete like grand decadent way in which they do it, the way he just blows the back of his head off.
Yeah, it's
like a shot through the back of his head.
The one exploding bullet. The one chance you've got, like, yeah. Yeah,
so
great.
Yeah, it's a great episode. I think not quite my favourite episode of the show, but it's a 10 out of 10 episode for me.
It
works brilliantly.
I mean, that scene just
makes it does. It's just it's genius. So before we get like progressing the series, how do we think like Rugen said about Gus? Mm. How do you think it works with him being brought into the show? Like again, he's brought in very quietly as it progresses.
I think Gus is a really clear example of how of everything that Breaking Bad's always doing, which is just raising the stakes.
Yeah,
he's like so much more dangerous than Tuco.
Exactly, and the cousins. That's what's great about him. He's a worthy adversary.
As the world opens up, he's like a kind of really key part of that. He's like, he kind of, you almost think like, he was Walt once, this guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's just so, it just doesn't fit with these kind of, you know, tattooed like, bald kind of like
you kind of feel like that's what Walt's aspiring to be. Like that's just like a future.
And he doesn't even know it yet.
It's a really like subtle character that is, again, it's a build. It's a build of the character and his like impact. So we'll move on to episode 10, which is Fly, which again is kind of it splits audiences
a
little
wicked
bit.
Episode.
But I think it's again it's just another example of like, we've built it up and now we're gonna stop. And it's just it's great.
It's Rian Johnson, isn't it? The guy that did
It's really visually stylish.
Yeah, very did very well in a bottle episode.
Yeah, and it's just it's
a bit of a Danny Boyle with the rock situation.
It did, and he managed to make it work. But I think it's got my favourite bit of Bryan Cranston acting in the entire show, and it's a very high standard.
He's insane at this point.
But yeah. But the monologue where he's like he's giving him the like sleeping pills or whatever, and he's talking about Jane.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, again, it's one of those moments, oh my god, he's gonna tell Jesse about Jane. And
it's like the second cell phone when he's under anesthetic.
Yeah, and it's just it's
a moment where he
kind of communicates his guilt without communicating his guilt, and it's just a really, really well acted and great.
Oh, he's so good. Especially in that episode.
Yeah, I think in that moment he kind of was like, hang on, Aaron Paul, I'm still awesome in this show.
Yeah, yeah. Take a step back, Aaron Paul, I'll show you how it's done.
I think like after that episode, it's like kind of a two part finale, I guess, which is what we'll talk about now. The thing about it is, it wasn't necessarily a payoff to the whole series in a way. It just kind of brought in the plot at the end. Mm. But that worked better than the payoff to the whole series in season 2.
Yeah.
I think these two episodes are probably my favourite episodes of Breaking Bad, I think.
Yeah.
The final two, I'm tempted to say.
Yeah.
The way it just concluded, just the intensity. And again, like, episode 12 is just Aaron Paul more than anything else.
What about
just,
Mike?
Mike is more the final episode for me, but like the episode 12, they kind of had a lot of plot to get through, but they got through it in a way that was like believable, and the performance is so good, and it also had that awesome sequence with Wendy at the beginning, which is just genius.
Which bit was the montage
cut to the 60s music where Wendy's kind of
that was really good.
Yeah.
I love that. It's another example of, oh my god, we've got so much like intensity to get through, we'll just give you this.
And
yeah,
this is the episode where Walt has his unselfish moment, which happens to be murder, but
and then he manages to take away in the next episode. But yeah, it's got, again, it's another one of those episode endings where it's just what just happened exactly, and it just is again, it's very, very
that was a nice moment. That was a nice moment, even though it's kind of funny because it's so morally ambiguous, but he saves Jesse's morality by doing himself.
It's the worst thing he's ever done, but he's done it for the first
bit where he gets out of the car and without a second thought just shoots the guy in the head.
Yeah,
and that was bad.
That moment all of us were just like, whoa, okay, Walt.
I think Jesse would be like that as well. Just like,
yeah, he's unbelievable how far he's gone. Again, it's another point of no return for Walt. He just kind of keeps raising that bar.
By that stage already, he's gone.
And again, he manages to raise it even further in the last episode, which we'll get to now, which I think is probably the best episode of Breaking Bad today, which is appropriate as it gets better, as it goes along.
It's an amazing finale.
It's so perfectly written, the way it brings in all the side characters, and it just builds up to the Jesse and Walt at the end. It's kind of like the sequence with Gail in his apartment. It's just like great writing.
Yeah.
Nothing's happening, but it's perfect. That tells you his character in an instant.
Yeah,
and it's like the scenes with Mike, which is obviously the most genius part, because Mike was throughout season 3, but he didn't really make much of an impact. And then
always felt though that he knew, you know, he was a bit more savvy, and every time you first see him, you think, oh, you know, he's just some heavy for Saul, and then you realise, okay, you know, he's got moves, he's got skills, and then you're like, okay, this guy's like ex-CIA or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, but it's like the moment again where it's like there's a moment where every performance is like, oh my god, this is as good as them as well.
Yeah.
And I feel like with Giancarlo Esposito, Gus is like, oh my god, he's as good as well, and Jesse, and then Hank, oh my god, he is. And then this is another moment where you're like, well, Mike is now also as fascinating as
Mike
has.
Yeah, Mike has some a great monologue. Is it Half Measures?
It's in the one before. Yeah, I agree. Where that's just one of the best acted scenes in the entire show, and it just again it keeps bringing in characters that manages to like always surprise you in your depth and be Leon in the sequence where he basically rinses about six cartel guys in one shot, which is just genius.
I mean, the action in Breaking Bad, and it's there's not that much action,
but
the
when
third
it does,
series is quite action packed. As good as any
it's
action
really
film.
Quite, and I love that scene because it kind of moves away from the comedy season, but that scene is kind of hilarious at the same time being awesome. And
not,
it just,
wow. Yeah. this is real life because it's Breaking Bad. You know, it's a real place, but this is like some fucking like Arnold Schwarzenegger shit. Like.
Yeah, it really is. So, what do we think about the way the episode ended? With Jesse.
Well, it's obviously incredibly frustrating, but also dramatically great.
I was totally sure how it ends. I mean, there's no point in saying spoiler alert.
I think by this point we've crossed it. We've certainly done
God
that.
God damn it, I've seen all of them except the last one.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, like, the end is so kind of horrible. When I saw it, I thought, like, and I still do think, like, yeah, he's shot Gale.
Yeah.
Gale's dead.
I
was certain. But there's loads of doubt. There is doubt, and I think if whenever a TV show ends with a gunshot.
Yeah, I hope he does. I think I like that there's doubt, but I hope that he's done it because it's such a powerful moment for the character. They've gone great lengths to have him never kill anybody before. So what that means that when that finally does happen, it's a moment of like really
great
power.
And it's not just killing someone, it's killing an innocent man.
Like, well, not, he does cook meth.
Yeah, but he's
much more innocent than Walt or Jesse are at this point.
He's so like harmless and nice.
It is, he's such a nice, like the nicest meth cook that ever was. And it just is because when he's first introduced Gale, he's kind of always kind of there. He's kind of it really really sad for him, and it's like a really really
what
I find strange actually is in a way where Walt is, there's Gale on one side and Gus on the other, and Walt's it looks now like Walt's heading towards Gus.
Yeah, Walt,
he could so easily have been
Gale. He just basically want the thing
and,
is,
you know, the mild mannered cook, because that's exactly who he is in the first
series. He wanted
series.
To just come in, he wanted to just cook, and he wanted to go home, but he just kind of has become
imagine
a gangster in the meantime.
Instead of trying on his own from the start, imagine if he met Gus. And he met Gus and he just became their cook.
And he just didn't have any...
He just went
into the lab every day, 9 to 5, went home.
How perfect his life would be.
Yeah, it would be great. And his wife wouldn't know, and it would just be like he got a different job or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would have been...
He works in a lab. That's not a big stretch, is it?
Yeah, exactly. And it's just... I think it's... Again, it's about the characters, the final episode. Again, after a season that had a lot of plot, it basically... The plot kind of came together in a way that was an immensely important character moment. Particularly for someone who had been like... Jesse, who'd been like developed... pretty much as the hero of the show, if not the moral center, and it's like a most heartbreaking moment.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it also,
you know, that he's something
point
of no return for Jesse.
And his performance in the scene is just like it's heartbreaking as well.
He doesn't have to say anything.
Yeah, he doesn't need to say anything.
Appalling. It literally is appalling.
Yeah,
and he knows it, and it's a great way to round off the season.
As it progressed, would you be comfortable saying like? It's like amongst the best show, like Wire Goods.
I would say that Mad Men and Breaking Bad are the two best shows on TV. And I would say that the first two seasons of Mad Men are better than the first two seasons of Breaking Bad, but the first season of Breaking Bad is definitely better than the first season of Mad Men.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, definitely.
I'd
be tempted to say it's better than the fourth as well, although I thought the fourth season of Mad Men was an improvement.
Yeah. I think...
they're different shows, though.
They are so different.
It's a crowbar comparison.
And the thing is,
you have to make
Mad Men,
because they are the two best.
Yeah.
Mad Men can't have an episode that ends with two guys walking away from an exploding
truck. It can't.
I mean, Breaking Bad can, you know, can kind of do what they want.
Yeah.
Whereas Mad Men's a lot more limited.
Yeah, it's a lot. I think Mad Men is. I think at times they've both been as good as the other. I'm tempted to say, in spite of all the genius that was on display in season 3 of Breaking Bad, the best episode of TV in 2010 was The Suitcase. Which is the Mad Men episode, which I'm not sure how I felt about that season, but that episode was just
amazing.
Perfect.
Yeah.
But my feeling is that it doesn't necessarily tell a seasonal story, it doesn't tell a serialized story in the same way Breaking Bad does as well. And I don't think it does the character growth as well, although it does it very
although
well.
Although
Don Draper is amazing, but I don't know. I feel like in season 3.
We're just lucky that.
The two are on the same time.
We're lucky that, like. During this time when we're watching all these shows and we're at uni and we don't. Do that much.
Yeah.
There's like the best shows
it literally is,
ever.
It's like, the it's 70s of TV. It's like The Godfather when that came out in the 70s for films. It's what's happening now, right now on TV, where it's people are realising the potential of the medium and actually exploiting it for the first time. And that,
I mean,
big shout out to AMC as well. Yeah. HBO's just been left in the dust.
Entirely.
I mean, like, these years...
Freaking True Blood.
These years, without Breaking Bad and just Mad Men, no Mad Men and just Breaking Bad, it's still like, wow, we're so lucky to have
this great
show. But, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It just
go AMC.
It literally is. They're both kind of like freaking masterpieces of the form, as they say. And I didn't even know that was possible until very recently. And that's, well, maybe The Wire. But, you know, it's great to have this kind of thing. And I think it's opening up for more shows to be like that, to say this is something that can work. And that, you know, it's an exciting time to be in as far as TV is concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool.
So I guess that wraps that up. Thanks for listening and watch Breaking Bad, I think is the message of this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
If we've not massively spoiled it for you. But, you know, I think you probably would have turned
five,
off.
Five well months left now.
Five, yeah, hopeful. It's been 14 months.
Louis's got a calendar, he's just crossing up the
days. Literally every day. It's like my hand is shaking at this point. It's like I need my
fix. Aaron Paul calendar.
I have, yeah. One day at a time, guys. Alright. So that'll do it. Yeah. So hopefully see you next week. If not, hopefully quite soon. Thank you.